Hello, and welcome back to Adaptation Today, the podcast for anyone interested in learning more about adaptation and how to study it. I am Rebecca Radatz, a Research Master's student in Arts, Media and Literary Studies at the University of Groningen.
And I'm Gracie Bain, and I'm currently an assistant teaching professor at the University of Oklahoma. I study Victorian media and neo-Victorian adaptations, violence and gender, particularly adaptations of Jack the Ripper.
And we're very excited to once more host an episode together, second time round. We are also actually trying out a different podcasting platform today, so double the excitement. But if you do hear changes in the audio compared to the last episodes, that's probably due to that if you're a regular listener. So this month's episode is once more part of our unofficial conferences recap series for everyone who missed out on the conference in question or who wants to revisit it. And this time we're looking at the LFAAAS 2025 conference, which centered on the theme adaptation and aging. And for this, we are super excited to have once more Julie Grossman and Katie McLean with us. It's an Adaptation Today editor reunion. I think most people probably know you or know of you, but just for any new listeners, would you mind introducing yourselves again?
Sure. Thank you so much, both. I'm Julie Grossman, and I teach in the English and Communication Department at Lemoyne College in Syracuse, New York. My main areas of specialization are adaptation studies, classical Hollywood film, also TV and gender studies. I'm the former chair of the Association of Adaptation Studies Organization, and I'm the founding and current co-editor with Barton Palmer of the Palgrave Studies in Adaptation and Visual Culture book series.
And my name is Katie McLean. I teach at Colorado Mesa University in the Department of Languages, Literature, and Mass Communication. My research focuses on adaptation studies, American literature, masculinity studies, and contemporary pop culture. And my current research mostly focuses on authorized grief and adapted violence in 21st century adaptations of American literature. I'm super excited to talk about the conference again today with you guys.
So exciting to have you here.
We are Rebecca and I are particularly excited about this episode for lots of reasons, obviously. But one of those reasons is that our actual first episode of our Adaptation Today podcast was about the LFAAAS conference in 2024. So it's very much a full circle moment for us, and we're excited to return to it. So as we reflect on, you know, just Adaptation Today and the podcast slightly aging, Julie, can you tell us a little bit about the choice of aging for the conference?
Yeah, sure. All of us were really excited about this topic, though I will say that the initial instigation was an MLA panel on aging and adaptation that was proposed by the MLA Aging Group and the Forum on Adaptation Studies that included one of our co-organizers, Tom Leach, that MLA did not accept. So that MLA panel didn't come together, so we were really happy to divert that topic to this year's LFAAS joint online meeting. And the five of us who co-organized, this is really truly a dream team. I love working with all of these people. Alan Redman, Seda Oz, John Sanders, Tom Leach, and I thought aging and adaptation was such a rich topic. It's a theme that we can find within texts, but it can also be explored in terms of academic eras, like, you know, asking the question of whether or not we're in an age of adaptation now. And age and adaptation, we thought, could bring us to media and seriality issues in legacy quills, for example, when aging actors make appearances in the franchises they earlier helped to form, like Harrison Ford appearing in Blade Runner 2049, or in the talk I gave, I was talking about Cheryl Lee, Kyle MacLachlan, Peggy Lipton, Richard Boehmer, etc., appearing 25 years after the TV show Twin Peaks in The Return. But we also considered the interesting question of how texts age or possibly age out. And also we wondered whether there might be some fruitful commentary on how aging is a continuous act and process of adaptation. Both aging and adaptation are, of course, about process and also acceptance.
I found this a really fascinating topic. And while visiting the conference, I was there for the first day only, unfortunately, but I kept wondering if you think that the focus of aging is also important in order to draw attention not only towards how the discipline has aged in the last years, but also to its historicization. I've been thinking about that because I recently reread Camilla Elliott's Theorizing Adaptation, which was the first book that really highlighted for me what a long history adaptation studies actually has. It hadn't really come up in my studies beforehand.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting. I mean, so there's a little bit of a paradox there. I'm talking about this question of whether or not we're in an age of adaptation. But as you rightly point out, Camilla Elliott's book shows us the deep history of not only adaptations, but adaptation studies. I think that's a really interesting thing to think about. And obviously, adaptation studies is so deeply interdisciplinary that, it has the potential to continue to grow as, people in other disciplines join us in theorizing and practicing adaptation studies across media.
Well, and speaking of that growth, like we discussed for the podcast episode last year, the organizers really did have a diverse group of scholars for this conference, which is one of the most exciting things about it. Diverse research areas and disciplines, as well as diverse physical locations and story worlds that we can see from around the world.
And I actually, just for bragging, because one thing I noticed about this conference in particular, and really just broadly our adaptation circles, is that I've never been in another conference when more than three people are in the room, right? And there are always a lot of people at the LAFAAAS conference. So just for bragging, can you tell us, the number of how many people attended or presented at the conference?
Yeah, thanks, Gracie. We had 111 people register. I think that's right, which is great. We had 15 sessions and between 45 and 50 presenters. And I think we had somewhere between 25 and 55 people attending at any given moment, which is really fantastic given the multiple time zones of our speakers and attendees.
Actually, so interesting that you brought that up, Gracie, because for me, I've been to like three conferences before, and this was one of the first things I noticed about the adaptation studies conferences in general. Also with the conference of the Adaptation Studies Association last year, there were four panels running at all times, and it was just amazing to see how many people there always are at these conferences. What also kind of plays into the attendance here, I think, is maybe the virtual nature. We did talk about that last time, but we thought it would be worth mentioning that again, just because, Julie, you also just said that there were people from different time zones. So is there anything that strikes you as markedly different between online conferences and in-person meetings?
Rebecca, that's such a good point that you just brought up about the concurrent panels at most in-person conferences, because obviously we don't have that in an online conference. And I think that really sort of enhances the sense of community. With that idea of community, a sort of immersiveness that the online conference sort of necessarily entails. I think that's really delightful. And then in addition, with the online conference, we have the active chat. And for me, I have to say, full disclosure, I have a lot of ambivalence about the chat because it's hard for me sometimes to multitask. And I do think that sometimes the Q&A at the end of the panels was a little quieter because people were so active and asking so many questions and sharing insights throughout the talks in the chat. But this kind of dynamism is, certainly abundant recompense for many who attended, I think, for not being in person. The chat was like blowing up at certain points. like I remember during and after Rebecca Rowe's intriguing talk on aging actors playing younger characters, playing children. Rebecca was focusing provocatively on age bending and age drag and de-aging, and it was so interesting. So everybody was contributing more examples and, you know, dialoguing in the chat. It was really kind of incredible. So, and also quite obviously, though, our colleagues in Asia and Australia were stalwart in giving papers at all hours of the day and night. We were able, because the conference was online, to accommodate and embrace a global audience, which was really gratifying. So every day we're introduced to new complexities, and it may be harder and harder for colleagues to travel to in-person conferences. So online events such as this one, LFAAS, and also the September to be continued symposium on adaptation and seriality. Please excuse the plug, but I hope listeners will join us for the 5th annual online conference, September 18th and 19th. These opportunities allow for exciting, high-level academic experiences where we can share ideas and meet new colleagues, albeit virtually. I also think our model of 10-minute talks is welcomed by listeners, since the papers are snappy and it is harder sometimes to concentrate on papers on Zoom for much longer periods.
And I will admit that I was one of those attendees who spent a lot of time in the chat and was very active and participatory in the chat specifically. But I do think that it's a fantastic tool for building up the adaptation studies community overall, especially through a forum like this conference. I agree with what everyone else has been saying, that adaptation studies is broadly very welcoming, which was something also discussed by Tom Leach in his mentoring workshop presentation for adaptation today, which you can watch online right now. It's Building Professional Pathways in Adaptation Studies. Also, I'm going to do a bit of a plug here that I want to remind everybody there's an upcoming mentorship workshop on adaptation studies today, Theories, Methods, and New Directions on April 25th that some of the people and our own editors here today will be participating in. So please see the Adaptation Today listserv for further details. But speaking to that kind of community and participatory nature, I'm always so encouraged by the community aspect of adaptation studies conferences. Attendees will add applause in the chat, they'll put in additional feedback, and they'll leave encouraging notes for fellow scholars. These small elements really matter in a somewhat empty format like a Zoom call online otherwise. Likewise, time can run out on panels, so the chat is a great way to introduce additional questions, ones that might otherwise be asked during the break period for an in-person conference. So that aspect of the format remains a real benefit to me, especially because the reach of the online conference allows for such excellent engagement around the world.
Yes, I think that's excellent points both of you made, especially with the 10-minute format, also what you mentioned, Julie. I think that really is correct. I mean, I speak still from experience here with COVID, long gone are the days, it feels, and I had online classes over Zoom, and it's just a shorter format lends itself to online presentations of all kinds. But also thank you for bringing up the workshop, by the way, Katie, that is an excellent plug to make here. So please everyone go check it out. It was very nice last time. But coming back to the conference, I mentioned briefly beforehand that I unfortunately was not able to attend both days. I know that some of our listeners weren't able to attend the conference. Well, I assume not everyone was able to attend all panels. So for those of us who were unable to go to everything, what were some of the themes that you saw as consistent throughout the conference?
Yeah, thanks. There were so many. I would say that the question about the aging of texts was really interesting to me. I loved your talk, Katie, on the necessity for adapting perspectives when we put Ghost at a Watchman alongside To Kill a Mockingbird and challenge the reverence paid to a fictional character like Atticus Finch. And my student, Carly Nicolai, gave a wonderful presentation on what ages well and how this positive aging happens in the Watchmen franchise and what ages less well, even within the same franchise, which I think raises questions methodologically about how we account for adaptations and sources and scripts, as Tom Leach calls sources, amidst changing cultural norms.
And I will say it was so wonderful to see Carly there at the conference as an early scholar who was excited to present her work, and what a wonderful community kind of gathered around her. I was also really excited by some of the unexpected overlaps with the theme of aging and adaptation just generally throughout the conference, especially beyond those of what I expected, which I should always expect. My panel was actually an excellent example of this occurrence, I thought. Our panel was initially themed as adaptations across ages, but resulted in a fantastic conversation about the concept of great men as fictional characters alongside great men as the creators of those story worlds. I was really excited to discuss with my fellow panelists, as well as conference attendees, about the narrative limitations and emotional connections set by these texts, changes that ultimately transform due to the process of age and adaptation. And I was also excited to see some of those ideas extending throughout the entire conference.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Other things that really struck me, the questions about enchantment and disenchantment in connection with texts and adaptations. This came up in connection with Tomas Eliot's terrific talk about early silent films featuring dinosaurs. And then the theme was picked up again in Polina Rabina's presentation about adaptations and atmosphere. The question of, you know, whether adaptations enchant us or re-enchant previous works or disenchant us. I also loved hearing Anna Maria Fabian's talk about Shakespeare's sequels. I had never heard the word shakequels, but since Anna Maria was talking about gender in Shakespeare adaptations, the conversation then went interestingly to shequels. And there were just so many intriguing conversations and insights throughout the 2 days. It was very stimulating.
Rebecca and I second, third, all of that. I was thinking just, I mean, y'all were talking about obviously connections made within the community and in our own kind of connections to adaptations. But one of the things that I noted and really appreciated about the concept of aging or the conference in general was the interweaving of personal narratives throughout this particular conference. I don't think, you know, at least in my experience, and it's not like I've been doing this for a very long time, but in my experience, that's not, we tend as scholars to not talk about that. So many presenters seem to talk about their own aging process or, like we already said, the aging in the field of adaptation studies. And so I kind of have a two-part question thinking about, you know, the personal on multiple levels. Could both of you kind of speak to your own contributions to this conference? I mean, both of you gave amazing presentations. So I want to make sure that we talk about that too.
Thank you. Thanks, Gracie. And I love that you brought this up. And I think it's an astute observation. I also felt like the papers felt more personal than is usual for an academic conference. I will say that my own talk on Lynch, David Lynch, and Twin Peaks and The Return was very personal because I've done a lot of writing on Lynch and I've taught his works many times. And in fact, I'm teaching Twin Peaks and The Return right now in my small screen narrative class. But my presentation changed somewhat dramatically when Lynch passed away in January. So my talk became in part a tribute to him and about mortality and adaptation rather than just an analysis of how characters and actors had aged in The Return. And so this was kind of emotional for me because I really felt Lynch's death pretty deeply. And I guess it gave me my first opportunity to do a short David Lynch impersonation, which owed a lot to Naomi Watts' impersonation of Lynch, which you should Google.
And just for anyone who did miss out on that impersonation, it was quite a hit at the conference. The chat absolutely responded immediately to the impersonation. But in addition to that lovely moment of the impersonation, I really appreciated your presentation, Julie, because it showed the importance of memory alongside mortality. Lynch and Frost both clearly used The Return to show the limitations of nostalgia, but I felt like your presentation allowed for some of that emotion to enter into the conversation again.
Well, thanks, Katie. That's really kind. And, you know, I liked all of the presentations so much, but related to the initial observation that Gracie made, I really appreciated Aaron Sullivan's reflections on the aging pop culture scholar. That was her title. And she continued to ask questions about methodology and how adaptable we are or should be when researching new media adaptations. We're not necessarily secure or comfortable or even wholly interested in working with, which was sort of a way to bring the personal and the academic together in intriguing ways. I thought her paper was really provocative.
I think that's actually a really interesting aspect because, unsurprisingly for everyone, obviously I did not always do podcasting. So when I started, it was a medium where there was a question of like, how do I adapt that, doing that from my practice of listening to podcasts? So I find this question of how do we adapt to different media, also AI, obviously a big topic right now. How do we adapt to that as scholars from our personal life or the other way around? Really, really interesting. And I think actually this is also a very meta self-reflective moment for us because we did mention that, of course, we did do an episode on an LFA AAS conference before last year. We are nearing our 1 year anniversary. So we are, of course, also adapting that episode a bit. And so I recall that last time, since we are on the topic of new media and AI, we were discussing digital adaptations and the impact of AI, especially in the context of teaching that time. But these themes reappeared this time as well. So I've just been thinking about whether we have seen changes in the way we conceptualize these topics since then. So with adaptations call for papers on adaptation and generative AI, for example, it seems to me that we're getting closer to thinking about these things, not only in terms of pedagogy, but also theoretically. So I was wondering if you had thoughts on this.
Well, that's a really good question. And I think that adaptation today is just such a great opportunity to practice what we preach because we are adapting all the time. We can be nimble and flexible and take up issues in adaptation and media studies as they arise or are emphasized in academia and popular culture. And I will note, too, that the roundtable summary that Gracie and Rebecca, joined by Kat Champney, Kristen Figgins, Jim Fleury, and Katie, gave of the project of adaptation today at the conference was so informative and inspiring. But I think it's an incredible venue for embodying exactly what you're talking about here, Rebecca, which is just the sort of ability to respond, you know, sort of in the moment today to what ideas are circulating.
Well, and it's hard to understand in some ways, but Adaptation Today, the website, is over 1 year old at this point. We are also aging. And as I mentioned to my co-editors after our panel, I'm honestly so proud of our work over the last year. And I think our roundtable showcased those efforts without question. Additionally, I was really excited to see so many of the contributors to the website at various panels throughout the conference who were mentioning and responding to the ways that they had engaged and how they'd found use in the materials that we've put out so far. We're excited to have worked with so many amazing scholars during the last year through the mentorship program, the podcast series, and the pedagogy publications. And we hope excellent adaptation scholars continue to contribute toward Adaptation Today's success in the next year as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, I don't know, adaptation today, and, you know, particularly the podcast is something that I'm also really proud of. And everything that everyone is doing that, like the pedagogy and the mentorship and Kristen's unbelievable amount of work at maintaining that website. I don't know how any of you do it. And so I just think, yeah, I think that that's a great kind of thing to talk about is kind of reflecting on where we are. So I kind of to draw to a close, does anyone have anything in particular that maybe you haven't discussed yet that you took away from the conference or maybe a topic that particularly struck you and stayed with you afterwards?
I will just mention a few great moments for me personally, and several of them included, several of them were from Tom Leach, who is always illuminating in his comments in chat and those that he voices during panels. So I think he asked on the first day, for example, if age is a perspective and whether we can only appreciate new forms of adaptation when we're out of the game or, for example, close to retiring. And I thought that was pretty interesting in terms of our understanding of adaptation and then thinking about the margins. So later when we were talking about the aging Android data, with Sahar Hama after her great talk on aging, death, and legacy in Star Trek, Tom suggested that adaptations ignite a process in which, and I'm quoting here, temporal systems are moving at different speeds. And I found that comment almost moving. Good, it was it really struck me. Also appreciated Tom's question about whether or not ambiguity is always an honorific. In the humanities or in adaptations, is ambiguity always a positive value? And I thought that was a really interesting question as ideas about knowledge shift.
And I'm going to take this from a slightly broader perspective, but for me, adaptation studies will always return to variety of possibilities and possible discussions. This conference made space for talks on legacy with the likes of Marilyn Monroe and David Lynch, aging actors via discussions on Game of Thrones and adaptations of The Tempest, evolving literary canons around the world from places like Argentina and the United Kingdom, and a multitude of literary forms via research into comics, video games, novels, poetry, plays, television, film, animation, streaming services, archival work, podcasts, websites, social media content, and other things I can't remember right now, but I'm sure were there. And of course, all of these different conversations and ideas built together over the duration of the conference into fantastic panel questions and chat contributions. Adaptation studies is just such a fantastic field for exploration and change, and I'm thankful that a conference like this one continues to support such important discussions, especially in the online format, so we can all come together.
Okay, well, thank you so much, both of you and Rebecca, for chatting with us and just talking about the LFA AAS conference. And I look forward to the one next year. I'm sure we'll have a third episode on that. We are supported by the website Adaptation Today, the link to which you can find in our show notes. To keep up with Adaptation Today, visit our website, adaptationtoday.com. Join our listserv, where you can stay up to date on all the news in the field, or follow us on Instagram, Threads, or Blue Sky. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, and we'll be back next month to speak to you about all things adaptation.